the show.
Well, hey everyone, and welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. Very pleased to have you with us as we're kind of winding down for the summer, which has me depressed because days are getting shorter and I don't like that. Not a big fan. Let me give you a little idea of what you're going to be hearing on the show this week. We have an inbox question. I don't know if you remember, and if you don't, you need to go back and find the show, where we had Steve and Twyla Lee from our Focus Leadership Institute. They were giving us some great marriage advice. Well, Twyla is back to answer the question for our inbox segment this week. And she's going to be talking to a girl who is trying to resist feminism while she's in school. So what does that mean, to resist feminism? I don't know. I mean, maybe you just have to go and like get some kind of weapons or something related to that. But it's basically a question about two diverging goals, I guess. Two things that she wants in her life. She's pursuing one thing, wanting another. And what does that look like? And how does she make sure that her worldview is in the scope of making that happen? So listen in for that. And then for the culture segment, how many times have I talked about Alex Chediak? Oh my goodness. Okay. His book, Thriving at College, came out in April and I interviewed him about it. This is the book, one of the two books now that I have officially endorsed here as Lisa Anderson of The Boundless Show. Fantastic book. I've said it before. It is the best book, I feel, on college and the college experience. So you want to definitely catch that interview. He's hardcore and he gives some very practical tips for re-entering the school year. So if you are in college or know someone who's starting college, or you are well out of college like I am and just want to read it and figure out all the stuff that you did wrong, go ahead and get the book. It's good times. So that's some good stuff. But here we are for our roundtable. We've got a really fun, we're in a fun day here today because I need to introduce some people. First of all, I'm going to give our own Dave Sockheld a shout out because we don't do it often enough. Dave is here running the board for us. We love him. He has soldiered through with us for several years now, and he's just fantastic when he's not giving me a hard time, but whatever. I also want to give a little shout out to Ashley Brannon. She is visiting from Washington, D.C. She's a Boundless fan and now within the Focus fold, helping us with our liaisons out there in Washington, D.C. with what we're doing there on Capitol Hill and just working the scene out there and all that we do. So, Ashley, hello. And now I need to turn it to Martha because Martha has to introduce a couple guests, too, who are watching us from afar.
Watching from afar are my parents, Paul and Mary Krinke, visiting from Minnesota. So it's their first time watching The Boundless Show.
I know. We should have put them on the show. We should have made them come in here and impart some wisdom to us.
Right.
Maybe we'll do.
Well, they do have seven kids, so they know a thing or two about parenting.
I know. And I'm loving all of you who were on the, saw Martha's post on the blog where she posted the photo of the fam with the turkey farm. That still just blazes me away every time I think about it. I love it. Love it. So, good times. Okay, well, let's go ahead and introduce our panel. Martha, while you're at it, introduce the guest on our panel, who we also need to hear from.
Well, I invited my sister, Hosanna, to join us. She lives in Chicago right now, getting her PhD in English literature, right? Northwestern University, and went to Boston University for her master's, and went to Bethel University for her undergrad. So she is well qualified for today's topic.
She is very qualified for today's topic. You know, I did my bachelor's in English Lit. I doubled to communications and was going to go on, and I thought I wanted to teach college. And then I met, you know, just became acquainted with some of my English professors, and I thought they were just freaks. And so I was like, I don't want to turn into these people. Like, one of my professors would just sit by himself in the dark and, like, read poetry. And I'm like, that is not okay. That's, like, socially something
weird. They do that. One of my goals is to not end up like most of my professors.
You need to normalize the profession. I think that would be good. Hosanna's going to single-handedly help us move in that direction. So that's good. We have Matthew John back. Matthew, it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
You've just been out and about. You went to Alaska and back.
I was in Alaska for 2 months with Campus Crusade this summer, so that was pretty fantastic. Okay. But yeah, now back at the grind here in Colorado Springs.
Okay, awesome to have you. And of course, we have Martha. You already heard from her. Martha and I, yes, anchoring the table on either side here. Make sure people are legit and say things that are okay, otherwise we have to kick them out. So, okay, well, our topic today, we've maybe alluded to it a little bit, but we are going to be discussing the college experience. We're going to be looking back on the college experience for some of us. We're going to be looking forward to maybe finishing the college experience for
that
some
would
of
be
us.
Nice.
Slogging through the college experience, like Husana, who's apparently been doing it for about 27 years now. So hopefully she'll, you know, reach the finish line at some point here. But we want to talk about this because we're heading back into the school year, as I said, you know, with, like I mentioned, with the Alex Chediak preview. But I think a lot of us look on our college experience, either going into college or looking back on it, as kind of this idyllic time period of just, it was so many things happened. It was transformational, whether while you were at school or maybe within the church, you were in a college group or maybe just the group of friends that you met. For those of us that are on Facebook, it's been kind of a weird experience for me because now it's like all of a sudden I'm reliving my college years with all these people that are now friends on Facebook. And you think, you know, oh, I left that in the past. No, I didn't, because here they are. And now I know what they're doing and what they're feeding their kids on a Tuesday night. So it's just a whole weird, weird experience. But I want to just start and throw out the general question there, because we want this to be instructive for everyone as far as what are the expectations for college? What do we feel when we think of our college years? What did we hope to get out of it versus where are we now? I mean, both good and bad. And just some of the opportunities we had, what made that season of life so unique? And I just want to throw it out there. And who wants to just talk about college in general and just that experience and kind of looking towards, if you can look at yourself as a high schooler, when you first thought about college, what were you hoping for? You know, Matthew's like rolling his eyes. Like, it was a long time ago, huh? What were you hoping for? What did you think college was going to bring you? What was going to be the turning point?
I mean, I was excited to go to college, I guess you would say, but I really didn't decide till May of my senior year where I was going to go. I just wanted to, well, I was kind of an overachiever in high school, which isn't difficult when you only have 26 kids in your graduating class. So, you know, I thought I was going to, at least academically, kind of, you know, take college by storm and, you know, get all these big scholarships and stuff and, you know, go on to law school. And at that time I wanted to be a politician. So, which who knows where that went. I was kind of on that overachiever track. And by the end of my sophomore year, beginning of my end of my junior year, God definitely steered me away from that and was like, okay, just chill out for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And did you do state school?
I did, yeah. Okay. I went to Kansas State University, state school or public school all the way. I'm getting my master's at a public school right now. Mm-hmm. So here locally, University of Colorado at Colorado Springs, and went to Kansas State for undergrad. I was really glad I went to a big university because I'd been to a, like I said, a really small high school. So it was nice to kind of be on one end kind of anonymous and then, you know, but also be really involved with Campus Crusade. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, there were like 25,000 students at my university, but at the same time I felt really connected, by being, you know, I had my dorm friends, I had my Campus Crusade friends. I was in the men's glee club at K-State. So, you know, just a lot of activities. So I was in Glee before Glee was really cool. So
wow.
about 10 years before it was cool.
But it was before Wicked came out, so you weren't able to do the...
No. And actually, we weren't a show choir. I mean, it's like a guy's chorus. So
okay.
we weren't quite as goofy or dramatic. So,
okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was just a great... It ended up being... I mean, going in, my expectations were much different from what my actual experience ended up being.
Okay.
And I'm very grateful for that.
Well, the remaining three of us did the private Christian college experience, at least for undergrad. How about you ladies? What were your expectations going in?
I think I imagine that college was sort of the epitome of being mature, that you had sort of arrived at adulthood. And so actually arriving at college and realizing that I had no clue how to live, survive, do my own laundry, it was sort of being demoted back to square one, and I didn't realize how much I had to grow in order to, you know, even survive in that environment when I felt like it was just sort of the pinnacle rather than the bottom.
Mm-hmm. I looked at college as, okay, I'm going to get this done, debt-free, move on, get a job. So I really...
You're so utilitarian, Martha.
I know. It's probably no surprise, but it really, like, it wasn't necessarily something I looked forward to, just being maybe more shy and going from a class of 15 to actually a school of 1600, which isn't too huge, but it was huge for me. I just wanted to get it done with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I went to a huge public high school, about 4,500 students at least at that point, one of the biggest in the nation, and public, California public schools all the way. Y'all have heard that before. So my experience in even choosing a college was very bizarre because I had planned on, from the time I was sixth grade, to go to Yale, and then I threw in some of the UC schools in the mix, like Berkeley, and my dad's like, my money's not even going there. Why are you even applying? And then I thought, well, maybe I'll check out this Christian school and Trinity in Chicago, and my folks had gone there, and I was like, yeah, it might be cool to throw my hat in the ring. Long story short, I did go there, sight unseen. I thought I would do it for a year or two. Ended up being a great thing for me, and I stayed all 4 years. But I think for me, it was going to be, college was going to be the springboard to this amazing life that I was going to have and do accomplish all these amazing, great things and have super fun relationships and possibly get married. Did not happen. So, you know, I think that was just in the back of my mind because you go to a Christian college, shouldn't that just happen? So for me, I think I had big expectations, but very little real life understanding, I think, of what you do. You know, college is like being in the military. You're just told what to do. You show up. You have to do your classes. You have to eventually get some slate of something done to accomplish a certain degree. So it was just like slotting it all in. For me, the huge fear was post-college when it was like, so now I have this degree. What do I do with this? Because now I need to actually like show something for myself. Mm-hmm. So that was a little bit trickier. But what would you guys say as you look on your college experience, and you can, I mean, or grad school at this point, what was a huge turning point for you, like a pivotal moment where you knew that here was something that was a game changer for you as far as something you've learned in life, a wake-up call, something that just kind of drew that line in the sand between high school, college, and the real world?
I would say for myself, it was studying abroad my junior year. I went to Oxford for a semester, and just sort of the survival skills that took, suddenly being, you know, just conceptually having an ocean between me and like all of that safety, sort of changed how I, as a person, was. I became a lot more confident, and I suddenly realized that I could, you know, compete with other students. I was also, like Martha, very shy, and it was in Oxford that I actually realized I could sort of compete with a lot of other people that were more showy in the classroom, and just being able to, you know, figure out London and figure out the underground, and being able to navigate this entire country for myself was sort of when I felt like I actually did become the adult that I had imagined I was freshman year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
a big thing for me was spring semester of my sophomore year, I had applied for and was hoping to get an internship in Washington, D.C. with Pat Roberts, who was a senator from Kansas at the time. And like I said, yeah, I was really, really big into that. I was studying political science at the time. The note arrived from his office, and I just, even before I got to my mailbox, I was just like, today's the day that it's going to be here. I just kind of had kind of timed things. I was like, yeah, it's probably today. And I was like, I need to be okay with not going, because my entire trajectory in college in my mind had built up to this one point, and they ended up not accepting me. And so immediately I actually felt really relieved, strangely, because I had been making all these plans that I thought I needed to do, but instead God actually let me do something I wanted to do, strangely, which ended up being going and working in a camp near Estes Park here in Colorado. So just that day and kind of the next couple of weeks was a huge shift for me from, okay, here are all these plans I've made. Here's what I think I ought to be doing. And my perspective at that point at least began to shift to, here's how I'm going to be glorifying God with my life. So it wasn't necessarily like an academic or a maturity thing per se, but definitely a huge shift in perspective from how I had been to the direction that God wanted me to go. And I mean, you know, I could have done, you know, things would have gone fine if I'd gone to Washington, D.C., but it was just really cool how in that moment in my college career, God really really just got a hold of me and was like, you know what, I have other things in store for you. So, hold your plans loosely.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you kind of did make that shift of going in specifically thinking politics,
Completely.
I mean, you charted it out.
Mm-hmm.
Did you two, Hosanna and Martha, kind of decide what you were going to do on the front end going in? I mean, what was the motivator for English Lit? Or it's kind of like me, you know, with English Lit, my mom, when I graduated, gave me the shirt. I have a liberal arts degree. Do you want fries with that? A little bit like, because I mean, you got to think, okay, this is something I love, but what am I going to do with it?
Mm-hmm. In high school, I had started thinking about one day working for a Christian magazine and got involved with the high school newspaper. But when I started in college, it was kind of like, okay, really? There's how many Christian magazines in the country? And, you know, who says they're going to hire me? So I kind of battled, you know, with maybe marketing or something in business. But ultimately, really, the classes for journalism looked a lot more fun. So mm-hmm. I went that direction. And I think at some point, there must have been a click in my head of like, okay, I'm really going to pursue this. And got to know my professor really well, who is the president of the Evangelical Press Association, and did some internships, went to the Focus Leadership Institute, and had the opportunity to intern with Brio Magazine, and just made that my goal and went for it. And it worked out that I was able to pursue that as a career as soon as I graduated.
Mm-hmm. I went in knowing that I wanted to be an English major, partly because three of my older sisters were all English majors and I loved my English teacher in high school. And I just assumed that I would have to then teach high school English just because that was what I thought you did with an English major. And so it was several years into the program that I started realizing that I thought the professors that I was working with sort of had the best job in the world. And so I sort of readapted my thinking towards teaching at the college level just so that I could go deeper with like my own research rather than sort of as a high school teacher persuading, you know, 14-year-olds to care about Victorian novels. Mm-hmm. I could actually work with people that wanted to study Victorian novels. And so just sort of seeing what style of teaching I was sort of more suited towards, as well as figuring out how much I enjoyed research, sort of pointed me into a slightly different career path than I had originally imagined.
Hmm. Okay. Now, all of you, looking back on your experience, because we're all, at least out of the undergrad, several years out of that, some of us more, but what would you say, what would you do differently if you could go back and redo school? I mean, not that we want to talk about regrets or whatever, but what would you do differently that you feel would really have maximized your experience?
I really was focused on just getting it done. And like my summers, it was about, okay, what job am I going to do so I can have money for the next semester? And I think, I mean, I'm very, very grateful that I was able to graduate debt-free. But at the same time, I see the opportunities that I missed to work at a camp for a summer or to go study abroad or something, of just to enjoy the unique time of life that you have so much time on your hands. That's something I would have done differently.
Mm-hmm. I think I would tell my old self to just relax. Like, I was just sort of a high stress person, you know, and I think this is part of the college experience, that you feel everything really deeply and like you're freaking out about theology and your faith and what you're going to do with the rest of your life and when are you going to get married, all of this at the same time. And so I think if I had just sort of known to take it as it came rather than, you know, needing to stay up till, you know, 3 a.m. debating theological concepts, like if I had given myself permission to, you know, not try and figure everything out at once, I'd have been a little bit happier.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting as you asked that question and I began to mold over, I couldn't, and maybe this sounds really, you know, I don't know, conceited or something, I can't say that there's anything in particular that I would change. I think I would have told myself, you know, yeah, lay off, just chill out a little bit. But honestly, some of that even happened, you know, the end of my freshman year, sophomore year, where some of my friends were like, Matthew, you study too much. Mm-hmm. You know, you're taking this entirely too seriously. Mm-hmm. Well, they actually told me that my sophomore year then about my freshman year. I was like, really? I didn't think so, but apparently I was. But honestly, like I just, you know, when Martha asked if I would be on the podcast about college, I was like, yes, I loved my college experience so much. And honestly, there's nothing I would change about it. There's nothing Like I just feel so blessed when I think back to my college experience and, you know, what I was able to do there at Kansas State, the things that God accomplished, in my life during that time. It was huge. And it was just such a, you know, not maybe, you know, the past, you know, looks better looking back, or hindsight, you know, is, I was about to say hindsight's 2020, but that didn't work. You know, it just seems rosier looking back on it, because at the time there were really hard things that I was going through. But at the same time, now looking back, I'm so grateful for the path God had me on. So,
yeah. I think when I look back on it, I think of how I would have done better to, rather than focusing on how everything for me was a means to an end, like to get this grade was going to mean that I would do this and to do this and to network here would mean that I would get this internship. I would have invested more in real relationships and understanding what I could learn from folks. I mean, I, you know, like for example, my professors, I wish that I would have invested more time in asking them to pour into me and asking them to impart wisdom to me and tell me stuff straight up that I needed to know, instead of seeing them as a means to an A or a means to a connection for this or that. And, but that's so, I mean, it's so hard to do when you're young to really recognize that, but it really is something that I look at now. And I say, even as we have interns through Boundless and here at Focus, and when I was on the PR team, we had a ton too. I love the interns that really want to get to know me as a person and want to say, you know, Lisa, where, you know, what did you learn from this? What did you do? And even if, you know, they're doing it surely for the sake of networking or whatever, I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, it's okay. I mean, just get, because if you don't avail yourself of the experience that other people have had, where is that going to get, you know, I love when someone says, can I just sit down and have coffee with you and pick your brain about X, Y, Z? Because I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I made some mistakes that I would love to tell you about that you could probably not make yourself and maybe make some strides in that. And I don't know, I mean, how y'all did, like, relationally with that. And I want to talk to Hosanna and you, Matthew, because you guys are still in school. And so what that looks like for you now, you know, being mature adults, but still in the school sphere, like what, first of all, what, why are you still in school? With the churn is still continuing.
Yes.
And do you see yourself as, this is still something that I'm feeling called to? Do you see the light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see, what are you anticipating now in finishing the journey for yourselves?
Well, for me, with the goal of becoming a professor at the end of the tunnel, long way away from now, I really look forward to working with students sort of on that personal level that you were talking about, because I think it is such a time of upheaval that you are freaking out about anything and everything, and everything is, you know, a crisis because you've never quite had a crisis before. And so it's even more dramatic than it has to be. And so I'm looking forward to sort of working with people and going through that same process. And I think for now, being in grad school still, I feel like I'm trying to sort of enact that even now with the other students, because grad students are wonderful at being in crisis mode 24/7. And so just sort of being one that can be the calm one and actually talk through other people's problems instead of always being like, I have this paper, I have this many pages to write, you know, trying to minister to other people who are at the same level as me and as well as my students when I start teaching this next year.
Yeah, well, I ended up going to choosing to go to grad school because of a layoff. It wasn't that it was just I had been thinking, even from undergrad, I was, you know, I had had conversations with my advisor there at Kansas State, you know, what does it look like to be a professor? So you know, I had in the back of my mind, you know, I'd like to go to grad school. And honestly, the layoff afforded me the opportunity, which quite frankly, I'm kind of thankful for at this point. But I in the intervening 4 years between college and going for grad school, I had noticed that I loved having kind of one foot in kind of this academic, cerebral sort of world, and then one foot in ministry. And it's just been really cool how God has kept me on that path, even after.
I know you like being kind of snooty about it. I mean, I've noticed that when you talk to me, you're just kind of like, I'm still in school, and I'm just really pondering ideas.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I love using words that Lisa doesn't know. So actually, there aren't that many. But, you know, intersubjectivity and such. But there we go. So, yeah, I'm kind of on the same page as you, Hosanna, where, like, I'm in the tunnel and there is a light at the end. I think I want to be a professor. I'm planning to apply to PhD programs. But at the same time, I see, you know, where I am now. You know, I'm working part-time with Campus Crusade. I'm in grad school, so I'm able to engage these philosophies of the world and yet also minister to students. And mm-hmm. so I kind of feel like right now is a means to an end, but right now is also an end unto itself. I mean, I'm able to have those really deep conversations with some of my classmates. I'm able to mentor and disciple younger students. And so, I mean, quite frankly, right now I'm doing what I feel called to be doing. And so, and I feel, mm-hmm. I'm really thankful for that, for the opportunity to be doing that right now. And, you know, to only, you know, only be in my late 20s, still in my master's program, but to get to be doing what I feel called to do. So, so yeah, like there's a ton of uncertainty right now. I have no idea where I'll be in a year, mm-hmm. Whether that's still here in Colorado Springs doing college ministry, whether that's, you know, off on one of the coasts, maybe mm-hmm. getting my PhD in geography. But at this point, you know, I am just kind of enjoying the process and just continuing from the age that, you know, of 20, kind of backing away from this idea that I need to have everything figured out and just kind of letting God, you know, steer the car and, mm-hmm. and I'll just, you know, I'll just sit in the passenger seat and hang out. So okay.
The, kind of the final area that I want to land on and discuss is the area of faith and your faith in college. And there have been many books written about it. And we know that young adults always get the hammer from people like, oh, you're just going to go to school and you're going to chuck your faith and you're going to be, we're going to have to circle the wagons and re-witness to you and pull you out of the miry clay. And, you know, we're seeing a trend that actually young adults now and those who are entering college are really becoming much more motivated and much more taking ownership of their own faith. And I know for me, going to school, it was something I hadn't thought of at all. I grew up in a very protective Christian home, and I found myself at school, and no one was telling me that I had to go to church. No one was telling me I had to be in a Bible study. I had to attend chapel a few times a week, but no one told me I had to pay attention. And it was, for me, a real break from getting out from under my parents' spiritual shadow and who they were known as my dad was a pastor. My parents were missionaries. They were very involved in our church. And I was no longer just Lisa, Dennis, and Dorothy's daughter. I had to really kind of take my faith as my own. And it was kind of a big, it was something that I had not been trained to do. I was the generation, you know, I've just said this so many times, that youth group generation that so many of us grew up in, that just chuck your kids in a youth group and hopefully they'll come out okay. And not that I didn't have good modeling in my home or whatever, but how did you guys feel? Where was the point in your college experience where you really knew that what you believed you were going to have to own, or whether you had to re-explore it or figure out what that means for you? Any changes that happened or anything where you knew this is the real deal and this is going to set the groundwork for where I go from here?
I remember freshman year, I didn't have a car. And so I was looking at all these local churches and I found one that had a shuttle that it would come and pick me up at my doorstep. And so I went there, I think, at least for a year. And then eventually a church started meeting on campus. So I switched going to that. But I mean, that was a point where I could have just decided, oh, I don't have transportation. I'll just have Bedside Baptist, because mm-hmm. I mean, there's plenty of students even at a Christian college that mm-hmm. make that choice. Mm-hmm. So I think that was
because they think that by virtue of being at a Christian college, it's like their church.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we did have to go to chapel every day.
Yeah.
So, and we had to have
every
a
day.
Bible. Yeah, every day.
Wow.
And like part of your major was to have like a Bible minor, so you had all kinds of Bible classes that were required for everyone. Mm-hmm. So there was, I mean, definitely opportunity to slack off, but I just thank God that He gave me that desire, you know, to make that a priority, and mm-hmm. He provided the means to make it happen as mm-hmm. well.
Clearly, as my being surprised that you had to go to chapel every day, my college experience was significantly different.
It's a wonder you're still saved, Matthew. And we're just, you know, we're gonna check out your theology.
It's funny. I tell people it's a good thing I didn't go to a small Christian college, because I would have been that kid who would have been really cynical. Mm-hmm. I really thrived in that public university setting where there was let's be honest, it was Kansas State. It's not like this is UC Berkeley, you know, even at a public university, but still it's Kansas. So a little bit more conservative overall. But at the same time, you know, I had a a Zen Buddhist intro to lit teacher, one of my favorite classes, by the way. But she, you know, so, I mean, there were times where my faith was challenged, but it was a good thing, because if my faith hadn't been challenged, I think I would have been like, I mean, what's the point? What's this for? And so kind of being in that, you know, public university setting where I had to choose, where I had to make it my own, that was, I really thrived in that setting quite a bit. And yeah, it's so funny, like, kind of the public university is like this boogeyman. Like, I just, like, I mean, I don't want to universalize my college experience, but at the same time, like, you know what, like, if that student has, you know, a faith going in, it can grow. And that's been my experience, even in my master's degree. I feel like I have, you know, in my department is a really liberal department, but I'm kind of grateful for that, because I feel like I've learned so much. Mm-hmm. And I've been able to integrate my faith into like real life, as opposed mm-hmm. to just being kind of theoretical. Mm-hmm. So
I think I definitely was the cynical Christian college kid that Matthew mentioned. and it sort of boiled to a crisis in my senior year that I had to sort of admit to myself that I needed to either find a different form of Christianity or give it up entirely. Just every service I went to, I was sort of exhausted by the emotional, you know, requirement of you have to have this certain emotion during this certain song and raise your hands at the climax and all this stuff that, like, it just exhausted me. And I felt like every sermon I went to, I could fill in the blank to find the ending. It was just all so familiar. And I, you know, just wasn't able to thrive in that anymore. And so I actually went into a more liturgical tradition, was confirmed in the Episcopalian Church, and just sort of rediscovering liturgy, and it has a longevity for me that I wasn't able to find in the Baptist college that I went to in undergrad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my faith definitely changed the latter half of my undergrad experience, where it became much less political, where, I mean, obviously, you know, studying, I was really into that in high school, and just, you know, really caring about the issues and quote unquote, and just my junior year, my feeling that I was called to change things in the political sphere really began to crumble. And I just began to realize how much broader my faith was, and that my kind of understanding and how I should engage with the world, mm-hmm. Kind of became more multifaceted, more like relationally oriented as opposed to politically oriented, maybe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so yeah, I definitely, like, I would say my perspective of what Christianity is grew a lot that kind of those last 2 years, and it's continued to grow, and just it's like this blob that just absorbs everything, you know, it's just grown bigger and bigger and bigger and absorbed all these different topics, you know, all these different, now I feel like I have a much more coherent and integrated kind of idea of, you know, what biblical worldview, what Christianity is. And so, yeah, it's definitely, my faith has changed quite a bit from my public school experiences. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So 10 seconds, just down the table, every person, any last bit of advice? Like, if you could sit in front of 500 college new freshmen who are ready to go into school right now, and they're just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and they think they've got all the answers, and they're, you know, inwardly terrified. If you could help them out by just telling them in 10 seconds what they need to know going into college, what would you say?
Terrified, that word resonates with me. So I mean, I would say those freshmen that are feeling a little terrified, of a lot of people around you are feeling the same way, and mm-hmm. might be a point of connection, you know, mm-hmm. talk about it, deal with it together.
I guess I would say study abroad. That was the single experience for me that totally changed my mindset and just sort of broadened my world so much that I think if you have the chance, go and travel abroad and sort of experience that, because college is one of the few times that you can spend a lot of time mm-hmm. in a different country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say two things. Make friends with upperclassmen, because they'll get you plugged in a lot of places yeah. you wouldn't otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I was really lucky to have my older sister at school with me. And second of all, don't assume that these are going to be the best 4 years of your life. Assume that this is... the beginning of the rest of your life, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. and just assume that the life's going to be awesome from here on out.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And entirely shaped as you're, you know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people think they can just chart it. And because I have this degree, or, then I'm going to mm-hmm. do this. Yeah. Where I am yeah. right now is not where I thought I would be when I was
Heavens
a freshman
no.
or something. So, I would say my advice is, first of all, set up some structure for your college experience. Don't go in just willy-nilly like, oh, party all the time or study all the time. Just crazy. I mean, get some structure and figure out what that's going to look like so that you can have a sane experience in college. Get into a local church and form some solid mm-hmm. friends, whether you're at a state school or a Christian school, you need it. Don't just hang on the laurels of where you've been, and don't just, you know, dink around and waste a lot of time. Get into a local church and under the authority of a local church. And then I would say, look at the world beyond college. Mm-hmm. Look and see that this 4 years, it's going to end, and you're going to have an entire life ahead of you. So make sure that you understand that there are things going on in the world outside of your campus mm-hmm. yeah. and that you're ready to jump into those when you finish.
So. And if you do go to a public university, get plugged in with Campus Crusade or the Navigators or something like that. So
Give
I feel like
plug.
I have to plug. So, you know, repping the Crusade.
And especially, and that'll just be motivator for many people to go to whatever campus you're going to be at, you know, within the next couple of, well, where
exactly.
you are now. Come to Colorado.
Yeah, come to Matthew University John. Of Colorado, Colorado yeah. Springs. What up?
You can meet Matthew and he can be your mentor. Ah,
there you go.
There you go. So, if well, great, great conversation, you guys. Thanks so much for weighing in. Good expertise and from having been in the trenches, I think. So hopefully this will be helpful for folks. Thanks.
Seasons come and go, fade until tomorrow. Seasons come and go. Leave that smile away. Leave that smile away. You can come around, but never stay. Everybody look, everybody seem faded into a bad, bad dream. Wheels don't work, car won't drive. Nowhere to go, nowhere to hide. One naked man, one naked scheme, faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody glide, glide along with the back. Everybody look, everybody seem faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody seem faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody see, faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody see, faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody see, faded into a bad, bad dream. Everybody look, everybody see.
Well, hey, everyone. I am very privileged to be joined on the phone here. I'm sitting in the studio in Colorado Springs, but talking by phone to Alex Chediak. Alex, welcome.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me.
Well, very good to have you. And obviously, you know, I have not met you in person,
no.
which is tragic.
We have to fix that sometime.
I know. Well, it's because you don't come to Colorado Springs because you're out there in California and that's all you care about.
But it's too hot and dry here, so we need to make a trek out that way at some point.
I know, you should.
Yeah.
Although, you are now, we're going to be talking today about thriving at college, which most everyone in our audience should know about because we featured it on the website and, you know, included an excerpt recently when the book actually published. And I'm sure it's just gone gangbusters. You were just telling me it's going to be going to a fourth printing. And so obviously that means that you now live like somewhere in a beach house in Malibu, I'm sure, right?
No, it's all in diapers and food for the family.
Yeah, okay. I guess that makes sense. So.
Yeah.
But you have, I mean, this isn't your first foray into writing at all. I should say you actually teach. You're at California Baptist out there in California.
Right.
You manage a robust blog on which you talk about a number of different things, everything from relationships to, as we're going to be talking about here, academics and just kind of worldview type topics. You're also on Facebook. And so you were giving me a little idea of what you're doing this summer. And so kind of give us a little update on that since the release of the book.
Yes. So summers are basically for writing, for me, writing and other radio interviews this summer. For the last summer, I spent the bulk of the time researching and writing Thriving at College. That was last summer. This summer, I've been a lot of radio interviews, writing articles for various magazines that want to carry excerpts or synopses of the book. Other publications doing similar things. Some journals to pastors, for example, Modern Reformation had a piece in this issue right now on called Coming of Age in the Facebook Age, an article I wrote about college and developing academic skills in an age of distraction, and how do we focus on becoming excellent at, in our gifts and developing them into really solid skills when there are so many distractions. Some of them are very good and fun distractions, but yet we still have to exhibit self-discipline and focus and in order to grow to our potential. So just writing a bunch of articles like that. World Magazine's coming out with a new an issue this fall to high schoolers, and then they asked me to write a column for each of those magazines that they're going to be coming out. So just a lot of writing activities and radio interviews this summer.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Well, we're going to be talking about Thriving at College in part because it's just a good book, and in part because it is speaking directly to a good core of our audience who are entering college, in college, struggling through college, many different seasons I think that folks experience, or the people who are post-college like me who are like, hey, how come I didn't know this when this came about? So anyway, so that'll be fun. But also we have to talk to you about this because I actually endorsed this book, which we know it was the most compelling endorsement that you received.
Exactly.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to read my endorsement because those of you who have not yet purchased the book, this will certainly prompt you to run out and buy it. I said in the book, and I mean, there are other people, I mean, who, whatever, I'm Randy Elkhorn, Jerry Bridges, I mean, whatever, those guys are out there writing, that's fine, but my endorsement, of course, is the best. And I say, Alex cuts through the nonsense and non-advice so many college students receive to tell them exactly what they need to know. College is a pivotal season that carries great promise, but you have to take specific steps now to set yourself apart and thrive. Thriving at College is a cheat sheet, a strategy session, and a pep talk rolled into one. Investing in this book is investing in your future. And I know I jokingly told you, Alex, that, you know, kind of like what I said before, where was this book when I was in school? Because I really feel, and everyone here on the show knows that I'm all about no nonsense and telling it like it is. And I really felt like reading this book was so incredibly practical. I've read a number of things on college and the college experience specifically for, you know, Christians on, you know, both sides, but specifically for Christians. And you get a lot of theoretical things kind of like, you know, watch out about your faith and, you know, make sure it's a great experience and make friends and stuff. And just a lot of good, you know, foundational type things. But you actually translate that into practical, here are some of the dangers that you see, and here's really what you can do to kind of stem the tide of really, you know, whether it's just hemorrhaging a lot of wasted time that kind of comes about in college, or maybe misprioritizing things. And I like the way that you set the book up because you actually talk about a number of common mistakes that students make throughout college. I already said you actually teach at a university in California. You yourself actually went to Berkeley, correct?
For graduate school. For undergrad, I went to a smaller school in the east called Alfred University.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have had experiences on a number of different types of campuses, for sure,
yes.
And what that college experience looks like. So I like the way you open the book. You have in the introduction, you tell the story of Mike and Chris and kind of their two, the way that they show up at school and kind of their individual experiences. How kind of can we identify, tell us a little bit about Mike and Chris and kind of their typical experience and how we can identify either one in ourselves and then what we go about doing about it. Like for the college student that reads that and says, well, you know, do I have either of these guys in me and what's that ultimately going to mean to my college experience?
Sure. So Mike and Chris are both show up at a Christian college and they were randomly assigned the way a lot of freshmen are to be roommates. So as they get there, they start to talk about, you know, their expectations for college, and they're sharing about their lives. And what they find out is that Mike has a set of priorities that are centered around amusement and recreation, and he's found out who has the best Xbox system down the hall. He's found out where some of the under-the-radar first weekend parties are going to be held. He has no idea where his classes meet, what books he needs. So he's there because his parents told him he had to go to that Christian college or they weren't going to pay for college. But he's really there for amusement, to have as much fun as possible, and to basically delay adulthood as much as he can. Whereas Chris chose that school intentionally. He came to orientation day. He fell in love with the campus as well as the faculty. And he's setting up his desk, and he's got his computer there, and his laptop, his printer. He's printing out his schedule, not just with his classes, but also with when he's going to do his homework, but also when he's going to enjoy dinner with his friends. And he's setting up time on the weekends to have good recreational activities with new friends that he's going to meet. He's thinking about the debate team, the Wilderness Club. So Chris is being intentional to make the most of all that comes with college, not just the recreational activities, but the academic opportunities. And Mike is more passive, live for the moment, want to have as much fun as possible, and they're just talking to each other. That's how the book opens. And what it shows there is that we have competing visions. We each bring a worldview with us to college. That worldview tells us, what is college about? What do we expect from the college experience? Is college about partying and having as much fun as possible? Or is college really what I encourage it to be, is a launching pad into all that comes with responsible Christian adulthood? It's a temporary season of academic preparation and growth so you can serve God more effectively with the next 50 or 60 years of your life. So we kind of have those competing visions for college, and they'll impact what we become.
Yeah. So it seems to me, in the college students that I've talked to, that most of them fall somewhere between those two extremes.
Right.
That a
right.
lot of college students kind of, you know, you identify either, you know, one as being, oh my goodness, he's just a, you know, party guy, he's a loser, he's going to fail, you know, within the first year or two. And then the other guy is like, ugh, socially awkward, he's just going to be a geek, he's going right. to be hanging out in the computer lab, whatever. But most students go in and they're kind of like, I don't really know what to do with this college experience. What is this going to be like for me? I kind of feel obligated to go because everyone has to go to college
right.
or my parents are telling me, or I know I want to get a job. And so ultimately, hopefully after 4 years, I'm going to land on something productive that I can do with my life and have a degree to show for it.
Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, knowing in your experience, not only as a professor, but talking to so many students, what is a good, healthy mindset for college students to have as they approach the college experience?
You know, that's a fantastic question, because you're absolutely right. There are some students who are academically on overdrive,
mm-hmm.
and within the third week, they're pasty white, they're lonely, they're in the library till 2 a.m. every night, and it's totally unnecessary. So I think what's essential is to recognize there's really four components to college, as I see it. There's the spiritual growth, there's relational growth, there's academic growth, and there's professional growth. Under professional growth, I'd put in character development, just really becoming a competent, responsible, diligent, trustworthy adult. So those four areas, and then recognize that Christ's Lordship is at the center of all we do at college. Going to class on Monday morning is about honoring Jesus Christ by developing your brain and applying yourself to get a good return on investment for what whoever's paying for your college. Maybe you're paying for it, maybe your parents are paying for it, but class is expensive, college is expensive, so make the most of the academic opportunities. But also the times you have in the dorms, the times you have in clubs with friends, those are chances to grow relationally. So recognize that that is also a part of college. You have a chance in college to make the kinds of friendships that can not just give you a great time, but also encourage you to love and trust God more, to make wiser choices, to expect great things from God and attempt great things for God. So to really develop those friendships with whom you share the bond of Jesus Christ, but also not just that the Christians, but that the Christians who really want to grow and strive and be the best they can be for Christ's Lordship. Making friends with them in college, the chances you have for friendships in college are unparalleled, because you're living basically in a community of like people in a similar life stage, and so you have a chance to really bond. So that's worth taking advantage of. And some students, you're right, they're all about academics, but they don't recognize the benefit, the opportunity they have to make solid friendships. So balancing those academics and relationships, but also spiritual growth, making sure that you're taking time for your own walk with God, that you're finding a good church, that you're getting plugged in, and you're growing spiritually, not just to maintain your faith. You know, you mentioned earlier a lot of books on college kind of freak you out. Oh, you're going to lose your faith in college, or you're going to screw up in some way. And I think surviving college as a Christian is too low of a goal, which is part of why the title Thriving at College.
Mm-hmm.
So really, spiritually, finding a good church, solid friends that can help you with your walk with Jesus to grow, to become stronger in your convictions, in your knowledge of what you believe, why you believe it, and how you should live in light of it, and how you can best spread it to others. So spiritually. Then professionally, just becoming more responsible, embracing maturity, embracing hard work and being trustworthy, and when you say you're going to do something, do it. When you say you're going to be somewhere, be there. Become a faithful, competent person. That's going to be very important to you down the road, not just in relationships, but with your employers.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because as I look back on my college experience, I don't remember anyone holding me accountable to that kind of stuff. You know, I would just make these decisions and maybe I would show up or maybe I wouldn't. And now in the age of like social media, you know, Facebook, it's like one of my biggest pet peeves is the evite, you know, where you throw out an evite and it's like everyone waits to the last 2 minutes to even RSVP or maybe they don't at all.
Right.
And it's like, seriously, can you commit to anything beyond like sleeping and eating? I mean, it just bugs me.
Right.
So, and I think that's just, you know, problematic, not only for college students, but just for young adults in general.
Yep.
So that's just a little smackdown. Okay. But so a couple more, you gave a great practical example of the faith component, I think, because I think there is this general idea among Christian students that, oh my goodness, nothing's going to happen to my faith in college. It's totally solid. I was in my youth group, whatever.
Right.
But then they get to college and all of a sudden they're in charge of their schedule. They're in charge of their priorities. Maybe there are other things they could be doing. Maybe they're alongside or have a roommate who doesn't have a strong faith. And all of a sudden they're kind of lured into some of the stuff they're doing.
Right.
And I think it is kind of a wake-up call to say you need to own your faith and you need to recognize what are the steps to take, you know, really to make sure that that is solid. And it does involve bringing in outside influences that are necessary, whether that is, you know, obviously a local body of believers and you can get under some good teaching and some accountability, getting into a great Bible study.
Mm-hmm.
I've told that, you know, a couple of my nieces are at state schools, and I said, you need to define your circle of friends right now,
mm-hmm.
because you can't just float out there and just hang out with whomever is walking down the hall.
Right.
You need to decide who's going to influence you.
Yep.
Okay, on the relationship piece, I want to talk about one of your practical examples, because I thought this was great, too. And I remember reading in the book where you talk about getting into a dating relationship, and we talk a lot about that here at Boundless,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, you may end up 4 years in and find that you have spent all this time exclusively with one person who ultimately maybe at graduation you break up with, and there you look back on 4 years and say, well, there went that person, and then you realize you didn't invest in other people. What kind of, I mean, how have you seen that play out on the college campus?
Yeah, I think getting involved too quickly with a guy or girl is one of the dangers that freshmen especially encounter. So all of a sudden you're in college, you're living constantly around hundreds of people of the opposite sex, many of whom are attractive and winsome and seem like great people. And so all of a sudden you bond really quickly. And I've seen this happen a lot where a freshman comes in, they have a solid faith walk. And I'm thinking of one girl in particular, I'll call her Sarah, just make up a name. And Sarah got involved with a guy named, let's say, John. And very quickly they were spending all their time together. I'd see them right before class kind of hugging one another and always, you know, physical displays of affection. And then Sarah's a smart person, but all of a sudden she's getting C's, maybe a B- here and there if she's fortunate. And I know she could be doing better, and her walk with God isn't solid. So what's happening is that her entire social life is being shaped around this guy. And it's just not doing good things for her spiritually or academically. So I think getting involved too quickly with someone, and what happens is you end up falling in love with an idea of the person rather than the actual person. You have this mental picture of the perfect guy or the perfect girl, and you associate that picture with Sarah or John or Stephanie or whatever, and you're falling in love with an idea of a person, not an actual person.
Yeah, very true. And I would say also don't go to the opposite extreme, which is where I was, of just being everyone's buddy and being like one of the guys. That was kind
right.
of me in college. And my mom's like, hey, I spent all this money for a Christian college and you didn't find a mate. What was your problem?
Well, I think you raise a really good point. What we see, I see sometimes today is people thinking that platonic relationships are, you know, this huge opportunity. So I'll hear girls talk about some guy and they'll say, he's my best friend, but there's nothing else happening. I'll say, well, how is that really possible? So out of all your friends in college, everyone, this guy is your best friend, but there's nothing going on. Probably if he starts going out with some girl, you're going to be disappointed, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it would be. Well, then there is something going on, right? So it's this view that we can separate our physicality from our emotions. That's the platonic idea, and that's not how God made us. God made us to have our emotions and our physicality intertwined. So when we share our hearts with someone, a guy or a girl, opposite sex person, we end up being drawn to them. We end up feeling a sense of commitment to them, a sense of intimacy,
mm-hmm.
just by sharing things with them.
Yeah, totally. I know in the section on character, you talked and you alluded to this a little bit about the idea of living out of balance, and you define that as one of the common mistakes as well.
Right.
Give an idea of that, because I think a lot of college students look at college as this opportunity to, and so many adults are telling them this too, you know, this is your opportunity to fail, to make mistakes, to just explore life, to be out there and just have so many opportunities and so many experiences. Well, eventually you have to like hone in on something. So how can a student best find balance in the midst of all that they're called to do?
Right. Well, I think first of all, recognizing that even as a young adult, God calls them to responsibility. So we have this worldview in our culture that being a young adult is a time only to have fun, only to be amused, only to recreate. And we don't find that in the Bible at all. In the Bible, we find a view that says being a young adult is a time to be an example to other people. It's a time to work hard. We know Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Or work unto the Lord, because it's the Lord you're serving. And whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord, not for others. Colossians 3:23 and 24. So recognizing that work is a part of adulthood, and that me as an 18, 19-year-old person, I am already an adult biologically, and God calls me to be an adult. So work is a gift of God. Work is God's good gift to us to develop us, to make us sharper, and also to help us make a difference in the world. Recreation is not meant to dominate our life. Recreation is meant to strengthen us to get back to our work. So recreation shouldn't dominate, it should equip us. Mm-hmm. Recreation is a God-given gift to recreate or redevelop our energy so that we can get back to the things that God has called us to do. It shouldn't distract us from work, it should empower us for work.
Yeah, I thought that was great, the examples that you gave of your own, you know, spending time out in the water and stuff like that, and how it really did equip you to go back and then hit the books and study hard. And I think we flip that a little bit too often of just, oh, I'm going to waste time doing recreational activities.
Right, we have a culture that says, you know, we have a restaurant, thank God it's Fridays. And yeah. So it's kind of a culture of, you know, you endure Monday through Thursday so that Friday can come, and we live for the weekend. And really it's more that those recreation times are, we say thank you, God, for the fun of Ultimate Frisbee, for the fun of swimming and for the ocean and for, you know, beach volleyball or whatever it is, rollerblading, whatever it is that really re-strengthens and rejuvenates you. And then thank you that rejuvenation then equips me to go back on Monday and Tuesday and honor God in the classroom and within my studies.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Last one I want to touch on here quick is the mistake that you talk about surrounding academics, specifically living for grades or mm-hmm. not. You know, I think this is a huge chunk of the book and something I didn't think of when I was in school. The whole idea is it really blazed me away, because it's very much you. And I see this with young adults applying for jobs, even here at Focus, whether when I was in PR or currently, you know, and you always see the idealistic college students that come out of school and they put their first resume together, and it has like their grade point average in bold font and like 36 points.
Right.
And they're just like, let me just show you what I did with my 4 years. And,
right.
you know, and it's all like crazy, you know, but then they sit and talk in front of you and, you know, they're just all can't put a couple sentences together. So I'm like, what's that about? What was your grade point average telling you?
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think students today, that I find there's a lot of anxiety about their grade point average, about their resume, about what am I going to do after college. You know, our health centers, nationwide counseling centers at college campuses are bursting with students with anxiety issues about various things in life, often related to my professional resume and my graduation plan. So I think what's happened sometimes is students put the cart before the horse. The grade becomes all-consuming rather than just enjoying the learning process. So one of the things I talk about there is in Thriving at College is the importance of loving learning and living in the moment, honoring God in the moment. When you're in a class, love the process of learning that material. It's going to help you for the rest of your life. You know, you're in college to learn how to think so that you can, for the rest of your life, increasingly love God with a well-trained mind. So a mind that can analytically break down an argument or discover something that's logically false, communicate effectively, manipulate numbers. These are skills you want to have in life, and they're going to serve you no matter what your major is and no matter what job you have. So grades ought to be a byproduct of the learning process. Grades are not what we live for, not what we focus on. They're the byproduct of, did I do a good job on something? And a grade also informs me, hey, how good really am I at math? or how good am I as a writer? I have students all the time who will say, I'm really good at math, I can't get any of the assignments, I can't do the tests. Well, maybe you're not quite as good as you think you are, and the grade is there to inform you of that. So don't be angry about it. Use it to direct you. Say, maybe I should go into a career that doesn't have as much math. Maybe that's what God's showing me by my grade. So focus on an education, not a credential. A lot of students just want to graduate as quickly as possible, and they have that GPA as their credential. Hey, I did college. I have this GPA. As opposed to, no, what happened inside you? What happened to your mind? What happened? Were you educated? Did you grow as a person? That's really more essential.
Yeah, I think that's great. Good stuff. I think, too, just the idea, and you touched on this a little bit, that whole idea of one of the purposes of college and of going through the academic process is to show you what you do not do well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do not look back on my economics class in college and say, oh, my goodness, I was just a superstar. I was not. I had to sit there. I mean, I like had to figure out what in the world they were talking about, like, every day, and I had to review my stuff, you know, whereas when I went into, you know, English communications, journalism classes, then I was like, oh, I get this. This is where I'm definitely my strengths lean toward.
Right.
And that's a great exploratory process. And so
right.
coming out of school, having aced every one of your classes, I mean, you know, sure, you probably worked hard and it's great. And it doesn't mean, you know, don't strive and don't get A's. But at the same time, understand that you are not all that in everything. You know,
right.
that's
going to
be important.
I do unpack in the book study principles or some basic ways to study smart. Because sometimes it's not just working hard, but working smart. Some students work hard, but they don't work smart when they're getting ready for tests, when they're writing papers, and so they don't do as well, not because they're not intelligent, but because they don't have the right skills and they're not applying themselves in a wise manner. So I think it is important to learn how to study well, and you will do better if you study well.
Yeah.
But you're so right. The grades really reinforce and they redirect us towards areas that God's calling us and away from areas where He's not calling us.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Well, we're going to just encourage everyone to go out and get a copy of this book, multiple copies. This is kind of the book where I tell people, you know, if you're in college, you need a copy of this book. You need to be reading it. There is still time for you. if you're post-college, you need to be giving this to your siblings, to your friends, to those in your church. This is a great graduation gift. Like I said, we didn't even get into the appendices and what you talk about as far as like how to select a college, the whole idea of really owning your Christian faith. Do you? What does that look like? There's just some great content in here. And like Alex just said, I mean, the whole idea of giving some actual practical study tips. I mean, how to get it done from a guy who is on the side of like grading papers. He actually has the inside knowledge. I even described it to people as saying, it's like you get to sit down with Alex and have a cup of coffee and say, how can I do this thing? How can I make it work? So we will go ahead and link to the book. Alex, tell us where we can get more information about you and the book and just get the full scoop.
Right. So probably the best place is on my website. You can read a synopsis of the book. I have links to reviews. I have links to interviews I've done with people like Lisa and some print interviews, some audio interviews, a table of contents. You can read the foreword and the preface. The foreword's by Alex and Brett Harris, who wrote Do Hard Things. So my website is www.alexchediak, that's C-H-E-D like David, I-A-K, .com. So alexchediak.com.
Yep. Okay. And we will have the link on our blog as well. Like I said, folks, go ahead, get copies of this book, run after young people in college and hit them over the head with it because they need to read it. Just do it. Or maybe it'll prompt you to go back to college. Maybe this will inspire some people. They'll be like, you know what? I'm going to go back. I'm going to take some classes. I'm going to audit some classes just so I could do this right.
Well, it is a big financial investment, and we are seeing some students go back at an older age. Oftentimes, that's really good because they come with more maturity.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. So I think this book is just such a resource for students who are making it through and really trying to, you know, I mean, I think a lot of times we didn't even talk about high school, you know, preparing you for college. I think a lot of times we don't even get the full scoop on the mindset you need even going into it and what to look for and what to understand. So great stuff here. Alex, thank you so much for talking to me and being part of the show, for providing content for us, not only from the book, but you have written for us and continue to do so. So we love seeing your stuff and your perspective. So
thank you so much, please. Appreciate it.
How do you do? I'm doing fine. Breaking bread, killing time. You know me, I live in a van. what do you say? Do you live alone? How'd you like the show? Do you have a phone? You know me, I live in a van, driving through the night to that old promised land, singing to the sky with an orchestra band. You know I love you, yes it's true, and there's nothing in this whole wide world I wouldn't do. There's a sacred trust that is sealing up my sound, and the dream of Thomas Merton as I'm standing on the ground.
Well, hey everyone, we are opening up this week's inbox, and I am very privileged to have Twyla Lee with me. Hey, Twyla.
Hi there.
I introduced you on the front end of the show, saying people remembered when you and Steve were in here and we were talking about marriage. So,
okay, good.
But you are here to answer a question from a young woman, Bethany, who is currently studying in school and has a very interesting question for you, which you are equipped to answer because not only have you been a college professor for years and years and years, but you are currently a teaching fellow here at the Focus Leadership Institute on Marriage and Family Studies, and a social worker by trade, so you know how to get up in people's business, which we love here.
Yes.
And understand us and why we work and how this all works, and being a professional yourself and a female, so I think you're going to have a lot to speak into in this situation. So here we go. Bethany is asking, I'm a 27-year-old single woman pursuing a graduate degree at a secular university. I enjoy my studies and see them as preparation for work as a professor. However, this is my plan B. I'm praying that God will provide me a godly husband. I need practical advice on how to cultivate a godly value of womanhood and motherhood in the midst of a university culture that insists academia offers a more fulfilling life. I find myself adapting feminist attitudes and valuing God's plan for women less. It's during my winter and summer breaks when I leave the university that I regain a more biblical view through interaction with my family, Christian friends, and more time in the Word. Can you suggest how I can avoid this tendency to absorb the feminist messages I receive at school? And how can I prepare to be a wife and mother while I prepare to become a professor?
Wow, that's loaded with lots of good questions. And there is some, obviously, confusion and push and pull in your life. The first thing that I paid attention to was when you talked about this being your plan B. I think it's really important in our lives as Christians to be understanding how God made us as an individual and to prepare ourselves for ways in which He's gifted us, passions He's given us, and it seems that yours definitely is studying at the university and gaining this depth of knowledge. That's not a plan B, I don't think, if God has instilled that within you, that desire, that passion, and that direction. The other thing I noticed is that there seems to be an imbalance here. You talk about being in the academic environment and then during the breaks, going back and renewing your friends, relationships, and the Christian community. You can't have a balanced perspective when you're in an unbalanced context. So one of the things that needs to happen in some respect is that your daily life becomes more balanced with that direction that God's given you and the education, but also in nurturing yourself spiritually and your relationships. When we get out of balance with that, we tend to be pulled into areas that we aren't necessarily wanting to go. So an unbalanced context can't develop a balanced perspective, which is what you seem to be desiring.
Yeah. It's interesting because it seems like she is, as you alluded to, Twyla, like she's saying, so here's where I live my university life and I'm kind of doing this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for me to get caught up in some of the worldviews and some of the things that are being taught here. And then I have to go home and quote unquote recharge or reprogram myself or whatever I have to do. Yeah. When in reality, that should be a more holistic approach to her experience is what you're saying.
And it would really help to find a female mentor who is a bit older that has gone a similar path maybe. You know, I've been a college professor most of my life. I've also been a wife and mother. Those aren't separate things. And God, you know, here's the thing. Yes, you are a woman. Yes, you are unique. But your path may be unlike most others. And that doesn't mean it's wrong, but you need to find someone who will help mentor and nurture you in that path that is truly yours and help you discern the direction God's leading. Mm-hmm. I have a dear friend who's a college professor who just got married for the first time. Mm-hmm. And God gave this to her at a stage in life where she's almost 60 years old, and it's wonderful for her. Okay. Now, is that what she saw in, you know, in her 20s as her goal? But God gave her passions and she followed that path, and God has brought these other things into her lives at the times that are right for her.
Right.
And
we're not saying, Bethany, that that's going to be your experience.
No, I don't want, honest, that's very rare. That's very rare.
Let me just teach college now, and then maybe when you're 60 or something, you can get married.
No, I don't want to say that at all, but I know women, I mean, I think that's where I'm so passionate about women finding their place as God created them to be, and knowing that God will provide for mm-hmm. you across those dimensions, mm-hmm. but you have to have your life balanced mm-hmm. in order to help that happen too. And this one seems to be a little bit immersed here and then a reprieve from that, but not the balance that would really help move that forward.
Okay, so Twyla, how can she, though, acknowledge and honor her desire to be a wife and mother in an environment that pretty much is not giving her any kind of acknowledgement of that, no support?
Well, I think one of the things we have to do is become very clear about what we believe and why we believe it, and at the appropriate times to be able to share that. There are times when I have not shared my religious beliefs in the context of my profession because people were too emotionally charged and antagonistic toward it that they wouldn't have even listened. But in the right context, when people were willing to listen, I would challenge their views with things that I know and believe to be true and have, you know, can give good examples of. It also takes, it's hard to do alone. You need to find other people who have, even one person who has a similar perspective to you that has been in that environment or is in that environment that can help come alongside you, because it's a really hard thing to do all alone.
Yeah, that's good. I like what you said about just really looking at that holistic approach and recognizing that just because you are pursuing a graduate degree does not in any way lessen your womanhood or lessen anything else that God could have for you on the table. I mean, he could certainly accomplish that within his timing.
No. Oh, and I think as you look back, if you follow God's direction and leading in your life, you will see how it all fit together. But your path may be somewhat different than most others, and so you question it more when mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah. And if you need to, you just get up in their business and bust a cap on them. That's what I say. Don't be all catty, ladies. Don't be catty. I'm not going to buy into that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you, Twyla, so much for weighing in on this. I think that's helpful. And I think it's just encouraging to see by your example that you are someone who, as you said, have done this years and years. You've been in the world of academia, but you still acknowledge and honor your role as a wife and as a mother and how God has used you in that. And it's not impossible. And it's not impossible to be feminine and to be pursuing, you know, God's work in your life in many different spheres while you're still out there in the world of
yeah, and it's
university.
Not without challenge. I mean, you know, I've sometimes been challenged by good Christians too, that was what I was doing right or not.
Yeah.
And you know, you do have to believe and know that you're following God's direction and you're firm in that. Yeah. So,
well, thank you so much, Twyla.
Thank you.
All right, that is it for this week's show, everyone. As always, we want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@balnes.org so we can answer your question on a future show. Certainly, we answer ones like these. We answer relationship ones all the time. We bring in some of our focus counselors to get real with you and kind of get into your stuff. So, not afraid to do that here at The Boundless Show. But in the meantime, we hope that you're catching up on shows. We keep hearing from folks who are out and about this summer running and listening to shows or on road trips. And so we certainly want you to do that and introduce The Boundless Show to your friends. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Make sure you're part of the conversations on our blog and be part of The Boundless family. That's it for this week. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.